What's going on, people? You know what time it is. You are witnessing the Two Uninformed Opinions podcast. I'm your host, Marquette of the Marquette Effect. The other host over here doing this like nice little ashy dance is comedian Boogie Bynum. Yeah, man, we're back at it. This is what, episode number three?
Yeah, 2.5.
2.5? So why is this a half? Why is this a half episode?
Because, nigga, that first episode, I was half asleep.
I thought it was because this tank top you got me staring at right now. It's very distracting.
This is for any ladies that happen to watch.
Yeah, so the goal is not to have any female viewers. So we had Boogie put on something that would definitely deter the feminine audience.
This junk is attractive. Like, all this from here up, yo. I'm like, fine. I'm like a good nine.
Yeah.
From here up.
Yeah.
From my belly to my ball. No, from belly to my waist. I'm like a three.
You got a brand for that, right? It's called Fat Sexy.
Fat Sexy, bro. Fat Sexy clothing line's coming out soon. That's gonna be for all of my thick fellas.
Yeah.
Can you call a fella thick?
I think so. I think you call it. It was a homeboy of mine I used to work with. He was calling himself, he wanted to start a brand called Thick Boy. T-H-I-C-C. Thick Boy.
Okay.
But yeah, I think you can call a fella thick. I mean, it just appears how secure you are with your masculinity.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm good. So did he decide not to do it?
He's not. You know, people be talking.
Yeah?
They got a lot of motherfuckers. Even people like me who really be asking him, okay, thick boy, I'm writing this shit down. Like, all right, got one in the back pocket. Just in case everyone wanted to launch some shit. Thick boy. Did you ever plan on doing anything with Fat Sexy? Because I know I looked on like your social media, you've had that handle for a while.
For a long time. It's just probably one of my monikers. When I'm on stage performing, you know, it's something that gets my whole purpose when I say it on stage is get the ladies to hit me with the ow type thing. But then I'm looking for the salads from the fellas because then I know it's gonna be some hatery right there.
Yeah.
The ones I hear laugh, if they cut the lights on in the audience, I know they big niggas too.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, I'm use that.
I can imagine like how angry like a motherfucker who's just been in the gym his entire life, just trying to get like the extra, you know, Kevin Hart said he got like the last muscle you ever get. Just to see a fat nigga just get bitches, just to get, especially his bitch.
Bro, and then the worst story ever. They in the gym lifting give fuck weights. They give fucks. They give fucks. My ass be at dinner table lifting the big ass big gulps. I don't give a fuck drinks. I don't give a fuck about that shit.
Women really don't, man. I think there was like a study that went around saying that they prefer the dad bod.
Yeah.
Type of build. I mean, you're beyond dad bod. I would say you're like
I'm granddad
post,
bod.
You're postpartum. Postpartum. But like the dad bod is like, you know, I think that my hypothesis there, theory there is that a lot of women don't really work out or invest that much into being fit, and they don't want to have to deal with the insecurity of having like a super fit man around. Or it could be the stereotype that goes along with like a dude that's really in shape and, you know, they're typically or looked at as being assholes or people really full of themselves. And that's definitely the truth, man. You go to the gym, you see like the real fit guys, all in the mirror. No shame, just in the mirror, just they'll finish their set, get in the mirror, just start flexing, like right in front of you. I'm like, bro, they ain't even. But it's like, I noticed when I grew my beard out, there's certain things that like men do for women that we think women really like and just dudes like it. So like, when I grew my beard, I was like, I've always wanted a beard. So I didn't really grow my beard for any purpose. But I noticed that women didn't really give a fuck about it. But men would come to me and was like, hey, bro, nice beard, bro. Nice beard. I'm like, bro, I don't give a fuck about your opinion. I didn't do this for you.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on?
So the dad bod's out here winning. Dad bod's winning, man. And then I didn't get a thing about like this. If the female is with a big nigga, right? Mm-hmm. They know his ass ain't going to the gym. He's going to talk about it a lot. He's going to talk about it. And then, you know, guys, we compliment women. We see something that we like, it'll look good, we give them that, or we might be like, oh, she thick. or like, oh, you're looking good. So just imagine if your girl is somebody who's not going to the gym, mm-hmm. and you compliment her all the time, she know your ass ain't going to the gym. But if she go do one day at a gym, mm-hmm. you be like, great day, girl, I see you out there losing that weight automatically. And she gonna feel good about that. And yeah. She knows she gotta worry about you going to the gym and having a lady look at you because you're all muscle and cut up.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody looking at your fat ass.
I mean, it's the truth, man. I mean, I would like to have the best of both worlds where you ain't gotta deal with the fucking insecurities like that. Like, you ever heard that thing that's like, they say that women like intentionally get their man fat for that reason? Like, they intentionally fatten them up so that no other woman would be attracted to them.
Is that what she did?
Bring life on the podcast. I have questions.
Yeah.
Many questions right now.
Bring your ass. I got some questions. You're on a hot seat. Because I was pretty, I'm not going to say skinny, but I was pretty cut up.
Yeah. Like you said, your trajectory was real quick. It wasn't like a gradual climb. It was like over. Yeah, like a Nutty Professor situation. Like it was a potion in the opposite.
It was like, whoa.
You could drink a fat potion.
I think she did it on purpose. I think she said, I do. And then drink this. Drink that.
Here we go. It's the start of our life together.
I think we did it on purpose.
You know, speaking of like clothing brands, I had this idea of starting a clothing brand for an audience that I feel has been underserved. And that are people who are missing limbs. It's like you have a shirt. You have a motherfucker that was in the military missing an arm, and you just don't make this part. Just don't make this part at all. No sleeve.
Because why should they walk around with flapping sleeves?
Exactly.
that ain't fair to nobody. Uh-huh. They riding in the car with the windows down and the sleeve going like this.
Exactly. Like put something that has a purpose. Like put a pocket right there. Put you a nice pocket instead of a sleeve. Pocket.
Take the pocket from here. Put it in here. So they really got an ink pen? Hold on. Bro, I think it can happen.
Dude, you know what? That's why I think, like, that's why I knew I had to do comedy instead of business. Like, I do know a little bit about business, right? I've experimented. But my business ideas were always funny shit. So it was like, I had this idea of just sharing, it was that with the clothing line. It was also one where I wanted to sell fair food, like the food you get from the fair. I always wondered, I was like, how the fuck, like, people go to the fair to get food, and yet you can't get that shit unless you go to the fair. So I said, how about you open a restaurant that only has fair food, and the slogan will be fair food for fair prices.
Because you'll see a lot of fair, fat asses in there dying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it would be horrible for the planet. I'm not trying to fucking make the world a better place. This is going to be a fat ass world. I understand that. But I'm like, why hasn't that been done? I feel like that shit would kill, literally and figuratively.
Bar, do you understand? When we go back and watch the playback of this, I want you to pay attention that when you said fair food, how my face lit up like I got some Mario coins above my
head. Oh, yeah, I saw it.
Fair food, boy. Fair food turns me on. Yeah. I mean, it's like I feel oily when somebody says fair food. Like, I'll go to the fair, and this is a true story. I went to the fair, man, it's probably about 15 years ago. We at the fair, and I went and got in line for some pizza. And when I was probably like two or three people away, and the dude was like, got fresh pizza coming out? He yelling out the little food truck. Fresh pizza coming out. And the two girls in front of me, they was like, oh, yes. And I'm sitting like, oh, man. So as my turn, I get up to the joint. He said, yes, sir. I said, hey, let me get a slice of pepperoni. And he turned around, boom, boom, boom. He said, there you go, man. He said, fresh out there. I said, whoa. Drop it on the ground first. He's like, what? I need some foul dirt on my food.
For what?
That's why, bro, that's why foul food is so good, because it's dirty.
Because it's dirty food?
Hey, bro, ain't no FDA coming by to check on stuff, see what it is.
That's a good point. I never considered that.
Dang. So that's why it's so good. The grease, dirty as fuck. That's the grease they used on the last pig ear that it made 3 summers ago. Uh-huh. So it's like you sitting there cooking fries and fried Twinkies and fried Snickers and everything fried sounds so good right now. God, these carbs, man. Bro, man.
I love, you know, this year, I don't know about Virginia, but in my state, I live in the city that the state fair occurs in.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not having the fair this year because of COVID, obviously. But
yeah.
What they are going to have is they're going to offer all the food. So you can just drive by and get whatever food you want.
Like curbside service. In September.
It's the end of this month. You know I'm in there. You already know it.
Yeah. Ooh.
So what's the main thing you get when you go?
Pizza. I gotta have, bro. Dirty pizza is the best. Dirty pizza is so good. I used to work at Thai America. Me and my boys used to work at Thai America, right? And this one, I found out dirty pizza was the bomb. We'd be sitting there working on calls, but we'd be so busy. You know, it'd be like call after call after call. And you sitting there, and you ain't got time for no break, no pee break. So the manager, they'll come in, they'll be like, hey, fellas, got pizza in here. Nigga, ain't none of us wash our hands. We literally would get there and be like, pizza here. You can walk in, just and go right at it. So we all laughed about it one day, and my boy Chuck, literally had brake dust on the back of his crust. So we cracked on him. We was like, yo, you can eat that. You got brake dust on the back of your on your crust. He's on my crust. Look at the bottom of your pizza. We all turned it over. Pizza was black. And one man burnt was from brake dust stuff. He was like, this pizza was good as a bitch. Everybody just like, every time that pizza, we never washed our hands after that. We just went straight at it. So probably was the beginning of COVID.
I was about to say, that definitely is like, yeah, COVID. I guarantee you at least 2 out of the 3 of y'all got COVID right now. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
There was no sanitary guidelines.
It's fair food, man. It's fair pizza. I like the fair pizza. I like fair french fries.
Mm-hmm. You just get basic fair food then. You just want just an ounce of dirt with some basic ass.
Yes. I don't even need the food. Just
the dirt. Give me a mound of dirt.
Yeah. Put some pepper on it, squeeze, wring out some fried grease on it.
Yeah.
And pluck a booger or two. I mean, you know, wipe the back of your nose in my food right quick.
Yeah, a little bit of meth in there as well. Because you already know fair workers, they be on some shit. Especially after you put that shit together, bro. That's why I don't get on fair rides. Because I'm like, y'all put it together way too fast. It's like the ingredients just add water to the shit. Like, you ain't really got to put no screws or nothing in it.
Bro, they literally come in, pull a cord, and then the ride go up like that.
Yeah.
They do one tester. They look at it, go around, like, all right, it's ready.
Yeah, I'm not riding no inflatable roller coaster. Get the fuck out of here. I'm all the way good on that. But yeah, the food, man, I normally go and always get the funnel cake. Funnel cake is a must. Okay. The funnel cake has been getting they've been elevating the funnel cake game. When I was a kid, it was just funnel cake and some powder on that bitch. Now it's like they put just some wild shit that you would, like, you would put a piece on the funnel cake now. So I always get a funnel cake. Fried Oreos is a must, even though you can make those at the crib. And I used to be like real big on the turkey legs, but now it's like, I don't know what the fuck they feed them turkeys now, man.
Right,
like the meat has evolved.
At the ankles.
That's what I'm saying, bro. It's like, it's Fred Flintstone back there in the kitchen. Like, what the fuck is going on? Where does meat come from? And it tastes like ham now. You know what I'm saying? Like turkey.
Yeah. And bro, the thing about it in the marketing scheme they got, the marketing scheme they do for turkey legs, and it ain't no real marketing, is they literally sit there like, yeah, let me order a turkey leg. You want a drink with that? No. They're like, all right, here you go. Turkey leg, and you come back. Please have a drink. $9. If you're the boy to drink when I ask you, sure, $2. Uh-huh. And then if you're thirsty, $9. Because turkey legs be salty as fuck.
Oh, yeah, they're salty as a bitch now.
Bro, and then let me tell you why. I don't eat funnel cakes.
Why?
I used to work at King's Dominion.
Uh-huh.
And I had to make them shits every day for the whole summer.
Oh, wow.
I'm tired of funnel cakes. I don't want to see a funnel cake. Because all I had to sit there and get the grease. And you sit there, especially when the line backed up, and you sitting there trying to make them. And then everybody standing at the window like, well, I want to get it. And then you go to flip it, and it don't come apart because it wasn't ready yet. Flip it, you got to start all over. And they get everybody mad. Everybody lying mad, bro.
So when you made them a lot, did you eat them a lot as well?
No. And I think because of the fact that I was dumb when I was working at King's Dominion. I was in fresh out of high school. Well, I might still have been in high school, but I was dumb. And I was thinking, again, my body was different. I was still playing football and all this stuff. So my body was different. So all I saw was this dough and all this grease. So I used to be like, ugh. All this dough and this grease, And it wasn't until one of my customers said, "Amazing man, you can eat these funnel cakes?" I said, "No, I can't eat no dough and no grease." Mm-hmm. He said, "Nigga, do you eat donuts?" I said, "Do I?"
"I got one right here." He's pulling out of your pocket.
He says the same thing. I was like, "Oh, never even thought about that." I know it was dough and grease. And I guess because I was going to Krispy Kreme, I don't pay no attention to get donuts being made. When I go for a donut, it's sitting pretty waiting for me. I just walk in and pick one. I ain't sitting there and watch it. But if you go to Krispy Kreme here in Virginia, they got the joint where you can watch it get made from beginning to end. From you can literally pick your watch them do your dough. You can follow along the thing to get into your box.
Yeah, I didn't know y'all had a Krispy Kreme there. We got a Krispy Kreme here as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We definitely.
I don't know where it started. You know, we got a place here as well. It started in North Carolina, I believe, called Duck Donuts. And it's you been there? Okay, so y'all got one. But I prefer that over Krispy Kreme. And it may be because since I grew up with Krispy Kreme and I've eaten so many of those donuts.
Yeah.
Because Krispy Kreme is like, you can eat 200 of them hoes and forgot you had a donut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, did I drain that shit?
And that's why you have 200. Because you're going to eat one. You'll be like, did I eat a donut? I don't think I did. Eat a donut? I don't think I did.
Is this flavored air? Is that a fart I just ate? What the fuck is going on? But Duck Donuts is heavy. Right? So it's like you eat one of those, it feels like a hearty meal.
It's a cake donut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I prefer, man. I want to, if I'm going to eat it, I want to feel like that I ate something, not that. Because all you feel after you eat Krispy Kreme is just sickness. Like, I don't know about you. Like, once I hit donut number four, sick. I just feel nauseous now.
It's too sweet. It's just so sweet on it.
Yeah.
So I am the fattest dude you know that don't go crazy when the hot sign come on.
Oh, wow.
I get bougie when the hot sign come on. I can be driving like, I got a taste for a donut. I look over, see the hot sign. Not getting my money. Not getting no hot ass grease in the box. Donut.
Normally, that's like a fat nigga's Batman signal.
Yeah. He be sitting on watching TV. I think the hot sign's on. Gotta go. Nah, bro.
My city needs me.
Give me the donut that's old and been in the back and crusted. I like the fundraiser donuts. I don't know what they do to them joints. They sprinkle some kind of special crack on them joints.
So you're talking about the one with Krispy Kreme, the fundraiser ones?
Yeah, the Krispy Kreme fundraiser. Totally different from.
They got some age to them.
Bro, they sat there for 2 weeks. They've aged. They got old wine on top of them, and I swear to God, I think they get done and just like take the crack rock, put it right on top. There you go, because you bite into it, and the glaze break up like concrete.
Yeah,
just fall up, man. Them fundraiser donuts be banging.
You know, that's the thought I had when we with Girl Scout cookies. The Girl Scout cookies be a whole nother beast. My homeboy wanted to do a skit. What's your favorite Girl Scout cookie? Caramel Delights. Easy. I can sleep on the bed of Caramel Delights, nigga. Like, yes, it's a whole nother monster. But them shits definitely, they putting something in them hoes. Because no one has ever brought a Girl Scout cookie because they wanted to support the Girl Scouts.
Yeah, what the fuck about Girl Scouts?
Thank you, sir. Sure, little bitch. But make sure you put the Caramel Delights in the bag, please, because that's all. I don't care nothing about your schooling or whatever.
I have no clue what they do for the community. I don't care.
If y'all change the ingredients, you will no longer have my money, because I don't give a fuck about girls.
But you know they did.
What? They changed the ingredients?
There's a different baker to bake those cookies now.
Oh, wow.
Not the same box. So
what the fuck do they do? You got Boy Scouts out here building bridges and shit. What did Girl Scout do other than make cookies?
That's all I know. I'm going in a bitch like staring a big ass bowl of porridge. I've never seen a Girl Scout on the street. At least I see a Boy Scout earning badges and going across the street and go, "Hey, how you doing?" And people all across the street. I ain't never seen a Girl Scout in uniform outside of cookies.
At least we have some old school generals with Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. That's the one part of society that's not changing, because they get that ass in the kitchen. They stay there.
Yeah. Bro, the Girl Scouts here in Virginia don't even own uniforms anymore. They be out there in FUBU. FUBU and baby fat jeans. Just out here slanging cookies, yo.
Now, they really need the support if they rocking FUBU in 2020. That is a cry for help. You see someone in FUBU, first of all, he's dangerous. In 2020, that's not a motherfucker to fuck with. He ain't got nothing to lose. So if he asks you for money, just hand me your wallet. Don't even just make sure you take care of that man, because he will take your life with no second thought.
Yeah, man, it's like, it's weird. I have no clue what the girls are gonna do, but definitely they definitely have changed Bakers. And if you didn't know, maybe it's because I'm fat. I tend to notice things a little more detail. If you look at the box of cookies that you like, like, and I want you and anybody else watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, I want y'all to Google the difference between the old school Thin Mint cookies and the new school, the old school Caramel Delights and the new school. Look at the boxes. The cookies are different. Hmm. They have like the shape on the thing is different. The newer cookies are a little thinner. And for what I heard, they taste different.
You got an inside source at Girl Scout facilities. Bro. What's the update on the cookies, John? It's not good, Boogie. Change the recipe. You fucking lie. What are we going to do about this?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bro, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, my taste buds be on point. I can tell it.
There is no bad one. That where on the street is, I also have my sources. They have a new one coming out. I don't know if it's French toast flavored or what. But, yeah, it's like, it's shaped like the shortbread. Right, but then on the back, there's icing on the back of it. So I think it's the French toast one. And if you know, like, they have different flavored Girl Scout cookies, like in Canada and all these different places. But this one's just like I think a nationwide rollout. I saw it on TikTok. This guy I follow, he gets like part of his job.
You said nationwide rollout, and then you said Canada in the same line. It's a different nation.
I understand that, sir. Don't forget, I read books. What I said is they have different cookies at different places, but this one, there's going to be a nationwide rollout. Applying to U.S., you motherfucker. My head is big for a reason, sir. me and Shelton have that in common. We download shit very easy. Got artificial intelligence heads. But what was I saying? Yeah, so that one is – I saw the video on TikTok. There was a guy who his whole job is just to – it will be your dream job. It's just to taste test things before it officially becomes available to the public. So, like, when Lay's invents new chips, first of all, we got our brightest minds. Like, before, our brightest minds were trying to figure out how to fucking go to space, land on the moon. Now we take the smartest motherfuckers out of Harvard and have them flavor chips for Lay's. Because I don't understand how these niggas got chips to taste like anything imaginable.
Yeah.
I got a bag of fucking street tacos, carnitas, and I'm like, this is a goddamn taco. How did they get all of the flavor in this potato?
But you know which one was terrible?
What?
Chicken and waffles. And it bugged me.
I think I've had that.
Because I'm a chicken and waffle connoisseur.
Mm.
So it bugged me to taste a chicken and waffle chip. And it tastes like turtle shit. I mean, turtle it was shit. Disgusting, bro. Yeah, bro, this was nasty.
But so here's the thing with that one, though. Most people, and tell me if you agree, because I love chicken and waffles as well. If I go to a restaurant, and unless they are really known for a specific dish, or it's like we go to a seafood restaurant, their specialty is seafood, obviously. But like just your run-of-the-mill restaurant. If they have chicken and waffles on the menu, that's what I'm ordering, right?
Yeah.
But so many places fuck up chicken and waffles.
Hmm.
Right? Right or wrong?
Bro, absolutely.
So many places fuck chicken and waffles up. So maybe Lay's just had the wrong reference. Maybe they tried to get, like, whose chicken and waffles are we trying to taste like?
You know what I mean? Who'd y'all copy?
Yeah.
So you bring up an excellent point, and I'm glad you brought it up, because now...
this is a back theme. This is a podcast sponsored by Thick Boy Farms.
So I actually run my job, and this is gonna lead to something. So you say you love chicken and waffles. Are you a chicken and waffle connoisseur?
I would say so.
All right, so glad you said that. So now my next question, this is why it leads into my next question. What price are you willing to pay for some chicken and waffles?
It depends on the quantity. There's a place in Charlotte that is like known for them, and they give you like the special. It's not Dame's. It's I forgot what it's called, but it was that guy that's on Food Network that had like the spiky hair.
Guy Fury.
So they have like a picture of him on the wall. So he's been there. He's like co-signing and everything. Mm-hmm. But they give you basically a whole chicken, and I prefer bone in chicken with my chicken and waffles. Right,
for
like
what?
Bone-in chicken. Like I need to have the actual chicken. I don't want no fucking chicken tenders. All right, and they give you a special sauce. I think they mix hot sauce with the syrup, and it's just fucking phenomenal. But I think that their price point is like $25. So I would say I wouldn't go past 30.
All right. So if you have a limit, you, sir, are not a connoisseur. You're a chicken and waffle lover. And when I tell you that this whole conversation started when I was at the lab, the last lab I was at, not the one I'm at now, it started a snowball effect. And bro, when I tell you, I only mean like for a one day, like a 20-minute conversation. And nigga, this was going on for months. Like this conversation.
Fucking like a season of Game of Thrones and shit.
Yeah. It came into this big argument of everybody trying to say, because once I gave my point, they was like, it became this whole adamant thing about, well, am I a connoisseur? This is what Boogie feel, but they go on based on how I feel.
Yeah.
That's their problem. Just because I'm passionate about something, I can't expect it, but nobody else did. I can just give my opinion and just throw it out there and let it roll.
Uh-huh.
They was like, they started questioning themselves.
Yeah.
So the reason why I said I'm a connoisseur is because I don't have a limit if it comes to chicken and waffles. I love chicken and waffles. So if I'm watching TV and somebody says, you know what? We got some chicken and waffles that's in Portland, Oregon, and they're $125. Do you want to get them? I have to get on the plane and go get them because I need to know why they're $125.
Yeah.
So I have to go buy those waffles. We were on, me and Terry was watching TV, and Guy Fieri, he was in South Carolina, and he said, this is the nation's best chicken and waffles. I raised my eyebrow, turned TV up a little bit. What you saying? What you saying, guy? What you
saying? DVR'd it and shit.
Yeah. So he was like, yeah, if you ever in South Carolina and you go to Early Birds, South Carolina, he said, these are the best chicken and waffles. And I watched them, you know, they make it and everything in front of them. They give them the plate and let them eat. Mm. He ate. And what intrigued me was you could tell when somebody's bullshitting from the camera, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What intrigued me was he bit into it. He didn't close his eyes right away. That lets me know that it was good. He bit into it and looked up first. So he
You're like an FBI behavioral analysis when it comes to people eating chicken and waffles. It must not have been good. He looks to the left. He looks to the right. We had it.
Yeah. I saw that episode too. But he bit into it. And this is what he did. I'm not even bullshitting y'all. I'm just going to reenact what he did. This is how I knew I had to have him. He bit into it. He said,
made the I Love Lucy face.
When he did that shit, I set up like, where's this place? Google. Because had he bit into it and just me like, this is it. Like, I'm not even lying.
Yeah,
you should exactly. Send all that. They some regular old joints.
Yeah.
This nigga got big eyed, looked up, and then closed his eyes in ecstasy. And he put his fork down. And he looked at the cook like, what is this? I said, okay, I need to have him. So, what did I do? Me and Terry sat right there. I said, you know what? Boom. We got to go to South Carolina. 6 hours away. We looked it up. Googled it. Bam, bam, bam. This Friday, we leaving. We got on the road. Went down to South Carolina. What's the damn city? Charleston, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Charleston. And you get on this. I can't remember the name of the big street that it's on. But the name of the restaurant that everybody is watching is called Early Birds Diner. Their chicken and waffle is made with a pecan crusted outer layer. It's the chicken breast that's been beaten flattened. So it's flattened chicken breast with an outer layer of pecan crusted. And the syrup is honey mustard and honey mustard and syrup and maple syrup on the joint.
We just got to pause for the listeners out there real quick. If you're a fellow thick boy like us.
Let me repeat it for my listeners now. First of all, the waffle is already thick. The waffle is a pecan batter waffle.
Mm.
A pecan, did you hear me? A pecan batter waffle.
I'm with you. I'm driving with you.
The chicken breast is mounded, flattened out with a pecan crusted outer layer that's cooked to perfection.
Yeah.
And it has a honey mustard and maple syrup glaze on top.
And it was how much?
$9. Wow. Might have been less than that.
Mm-hmm.
But when we pulled up, The place was probably seats 50 people. Mm-hmm. Outside was probably 100 people waiting to get in. I said, okay, we might have something here. Let me see what it is. So I'm out there talking to people. What y'all here to get? What you here to get? They're like, oh, yeah, we locals. We get the chicken and waffles. I'm like, all right, cool. And I say, I saw the place on TV, and everybody started raving. Oh, yeah, we can't believe we're so excited it was on TV. So I went to the lady. I said, how long is the wait? She said, the hour and 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I didn't bet an eye. I said, can you put my name down?
you did.
She said, there's a lot of people. If you don't go out to your car, I don't know where you're sitting, but the range might not go out. So give me your phone number, and then I can just call you when ready. Mm-hmm. I gave my phone number, but I told her it won't be necessary because I'm not going nowhere. Just in case the people in front of me feel like they don't want to eat and they want to leave. I sat down at the table. They brought lady came in with a menu, and she said, how can I help you? And I said, I don't need a menu. I'm here for the chicken and waffle. And then I said, I get a side
of cheese.
It's good. Yeah. Kind of get a side of cheese. She, do you want a flavor of orange juice? I didn't come all the way this way for some orange juice. I need chicken and waffles and some water. Bring me the water, please. I don't want nothing.
That is important. You don't want to change the flavor of it. You know what I mean? You spend some of the first time. Exactly. Yeah,
unless they told me, hey, if you have this and you dip in this orange juice, different story. They talk about chicken and waffles. So therefore, I don't want your orange juice. I don't care how freshly squeezed it is. Chicken and waffle. Came down. I said my grace. It took a long ride, six and a half hours to get there. And then I bit into it. And a natural reaction, I swear on everything. Yeah. This is what I did. I just bit into it. So I understand what God felt.
Yeah. You know?
And I literally sat there, I looked around, and I said, this is the best chicken and waffle I ever had.
You announced it to the rest of the restaurant?
Yelled it. The best chicken and waffle I had, yo. And to this day, I have not had a chicken and waffle better than this. And I am so adamant. Early Birds need to hire me for their promotional.
You got to.
Thing. Bro, wait till I get bigger. They're going to be like, I'm going to talk about it every time I go. So it turned into this big thing at work, right? And so I was telling my boys at work, like, yeah, I got to do this. No, this is the chicken and waffle and all this stuff. So one of them said, well, let's just go there. This was a Thursday. She said, let's just go. I said, I'm not flinching. We can go tomorrow. Right there, manager's office and said, hey, the four of us are not going to be here tomorrow. We calling out for the weekend. We got in the car and drove to South Carolina for the chicken and waffles.
So that was your second trip?
That was my second time. No, actually, okay. When I went with the fellas at work, that was the third trip.
So you had a secret trip?
Yeah.
Without your wife?
No. We went twice.
Okay.
Because the weekend that turned out went, we ate twice. We ate it the day we got there. And after we turned the grid to leave to go home, I ate it again.
Yeah. And then say goodbye.
So I ate it. I stopped there, ate it before we got on the highway. And then I ordered it to go. I ate it when I got back to the restaurant. Then when me and the fellas went, we went down there, ate it. And then, you know, delicious. Mm-hmm. I got me a to go, bring it back. And then every time somebody goes to South Carolina, I'd be like, hey, go to Early Birds. Here goes some money to me, cash app you. Bad is joint for you. And I'm so adamant about it that I've literally been sending the people there to South Carolina to go get it. And I tell them, if you go there and you get the chicken and waffles, you don't like it, your meal's on me. Mm. Yeah, and not a single person have I had to pay for them because they got there like, man. So, bro, I'm telling you.
South Carolina. I'm going to go to South Carolina, man. I'm hoping shit ain't closed because of COVID.
I don't even care. Find the cook. Go to his house.
Bro, breaking in like Plankton looking for the secret recipe and shit. I know it's in here somewhere.
I know it's in here.
No, where's the safe? Fuck the money. Where's the recipe? I'm gonna have to go, man, because I can never like taken a special trip. Normally, when I do travel, it is to eat though. People have like a list of things they want to do. Like how you pick your place that you want to go to is based on like what you want to experience. Mm-hmm. Every time when I pick a vacation, it's just like, okay, I'm trying to eat. What restaurants are there? What experience can I have? Like, we're going to Savannah late this month, like September 24th. I'm just eating, baby. I'm just digging the plate. I'm not getting no pralines, nigga. Last time I tried to get pralines.
Eat the praline, man.
I'm gonna eat them. That's the problem for y'all listening. I went to Savannah a year ago, and Boogie asked me to get him some pralines because Savannah has like they make all these special candies and shit there. And I got him the pralines, and I had one. I've had a praline before, but I didn't know it was praline. So when you said pralines, no image came to my mind. Mm-hmm. So I went to the candy shop and I got me like a big ass Rice Krispie treat. Got my girl some stuff. I think she had like the little caramel turtle joints. I was like, I have some pralines as well. And like they had me choose what kind of pralines. I didn't know they had like options. So I got like a variety. I'm gonna look out for my boy. I'm gonna get some variety options, pralines. They gave me a big ass box of pralines and I was pissed because they were like $20. So I'm like, well, $20, I'm gonna eat one of these shits. So I ate one of them. And I'm like, ooh, that was really good, right? So then I was like, okay, I'm not going to touch those anymore. I know those are good as fuck. I'm going to try this other one. Ate the other one. Thought, oh, these are even better. So it was that situation where only fat people experience this. When you, like, go, like, you tell yourself, I'm going to have just one or just two. Mm-hmm. And you have that one or two, and you stop for, like, 5 minutes. Then you go back. Get another one or two when you stop five minutes and you keep that trajectory till it's all gone.
After the 5 minutes, the other two gone. They don't count.
Yeah, might as well. Then you get to like the last two and it's like, well, shit, I've already gone this far. Might as well go ahead and finish it off. I've done some fat shit where it's like, you know, okay, how smart you is. If you have a problem with food, you get stupid. And like, especially when you're trying to cut back, because like, there's been times where I'll eat something I know I ain't supposed to eat, or like I plan on eating like half a burger or something. And I'll leave like one bite, throw it away. I think I did something.
Yeah,
like, that's 20 calories I just saved. Yeah, I did good. That's progress. Yeah, I would have killed this. I would have bit my finger with this motherfucker. But this time, I threw away the last bite. Let me ask you this, because you're doing low carb now. What's the longest you've been on like a diet regimen?
5 months.
And what, so did you like stop at 5 months intentionally, or what's the story there?
The reason why it was 5 months is because it's the same 5 months every year. That's the thing about it. It's the same 5 months. I always fuck up in October. and what's sad is I got a date. No, October 16th is when I know that life is about to end.
Is that your anniversary?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And then it's right before holiday season.
Yeah, it's our anniversary, so we just go on vacation for anniversary. Mm-hmm. So we was on vacation. That's what we eat. Come back. Okay. You know, a couple weeks, then we try to go back on. We try to lose. We just ate on vacation. Then it's Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And then once Thanksgiving, that's Thanksgiving Day and the day after Thanksgiving.
Well, Thanksgiving is 4 days, obviously.
Yeah.
Not a day. Yeah.
Minimum. And then by that time, December's almost here. I mean, December's here and my birthday's coming up. So gotta have that birthday. Then once the one season of 12th get here, it's a wrap.
Yeah.
It's a wrap. It's over. And then my wife's birthday is February. So she's February 19th. So I would say February, 28th when we start again. So February. So I would say from March to October.
It is getting everything back.
Bro,
so you never go past a certain level of bigness, because about the time you hit it, you get to that 5 month mark, you lean back down.
I'm trying to get
start the cycle back over again.
Yeah, but it's like I don't want to do that. I'm trying to break that. I really want to go past my lowest I've been in a couple years. So the lowest I've been is 253, and that was the first time I went low carb. And right now I'm 259. Mm-hmm. So, but look what month it is. It's September.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I need to hit 253 before October gets wrapped.
You just need a plan, man. Lowest I've been is 173. I'm roughly 209, 208 right now. Heaviest I've been has been like 230. But 173 is the lowest I've been, and I wasn't there long. But it's like I was talking to my mom the other day because she struggled with dieting and stuff. And she's trying to, you know, her and my sister are trying to get healthy. And she was like, I'm just going to make sure I don't ruin, like, fall off the wagon on the holidays. The only way I have a lot of friends who are like really into fitness. Like they're self-employed because they, like one of my friends has like 400,000 followers on Instagram, and he just does online coaching. So he doesn't do any kind of personal training. He just gives people a plan and they follow it. And then he shares before and after pictures and more people come. And then he has like other friends that I'm also know who just do the same. They just follow his model, do the same thing. Mm. And when I talk to them, they make the shit very simple. It's like, bro, you just got to have a plan. So it's like, it's not that you can't eat Thanksgiving meals. It's not that you can't eat Christmas or anniversary. It's just have a fucking cutoff point. So it's like on Thanksgiving Day, allow yourself Thanksgiving Day and then the day after Thanksgiving, if that's your prerogative, and then throw the rest of that shit out. Don't eat any more of it. Well, on Christmas, do it that day. And because when we say like Thanksgiving, we're not acknowledging that it's going to be a string of days together. You know what I mean? Like day before Thanksgiving, you're going to probably have like a Friendsgiving. You know what I mean? Where you can go over some people's house, they're going to cook. You got Thanksgiving Day, then you got 2 days leftovers. Sometimes nasty motherfuckers extend that 2 day leftovers to a week of leftovers.
A week, because I think for lunch every day. That's me. I am motherfucker.
I get tired of it, man. I get tired of it.
Not me. It tastes better and better each day.
Yeah, but if you do that, that weight gonna come.
And here I am.
Russell, I am no stranger to the pounds.
Yeah.
But that's why I told my mom, man, I was like, you don't have to, you know, it's just hard though. Because it's hard, like, especially when a job I used to work at, they used to always have these big ass potlucks. And mm-hmm. It was a week long celebration for any holidays. So, like, before Christmas, it would be the week before Christmas. They would have like bring your favorite dessert. Okay, now bring your favorite this or your favorite that. It's like, there's no way.
And that starts it off.
Yeah.
It starts it like, you know, going back after that, once you have your work pot up.
Oh yeah, it's over for you.
It's a wrap. Because that's
I just told my homeboy. Right into I'm trying to go back to my old job the day they had their potluck this year. I already told them. I said, bro, it's my same inside man for the Girl Scout cookies. I said, listen, you should tell me which day this shit has happened. Because I'm coming back to visit. I'm coming back to visit. I don't give a fuck about seeing y'all. I just want to play.
Yeah. You got to come in and play it off like, oh, hey, I know today was the day.
Oh, shit. Like, oh, look at my luck.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I just wanted to come spread some holiday cheer. Only bad part about it is like that environment is a lot of white people there. Some of them can cook because we are in the South. However, a lot of them cannot. I know what that look is.
You know what that look is, yeah.
Madison has entered the chat. So like people make goofy stuff, man, like put like animal crackers on mac and cheese, like just real goofy. Yeah. And then get mad when nobody eats whatever they made.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can tell how good your stuff is. Like, by the end of the day, how much of it is going?
Exactly.
You still got a full pot.
If you got a, and then you notice the one that's still got a full pot, they don't want to walk around with the pot like, anybody want something to take home?
We have a lot left over. Bitch is going to stay that way. I'm eating any.
I would literally be there with a piece of cornbread in my hand. But you want something on? I'm watching my carbs. Can't do that.
But baby, not even some fair dirt can save that nasty ass food. I'm all the way good. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was called a callback. Throw some comedy knowledge in there real quick.
I did one of my first callbacks on stage, and by mistake, like it wasn't even planned. Was literally because people that know me. I freestyle. Those that don't, I freestyle my jokes. So nothing planned, but I did a callback by mistake. And I knew it was coming. I'm sitting there telling jokes. Everybody laughing, blah, blah, blah. I walk off and tell some more jokes. And as I'm getting to something, I feel like I'm about to say something. I'm like, oh, I'm about to have a callback joke. Let me see if this is going to work. Da-da-da-da. Boom. Everybody like, ah, there you go. Like, thank you, little good night.
All bad is one of those things that works every single time. Now, I've not done stand-up, but just in conversation. Like, my stand-up is normally, like, at work. So any job that I've had, I've always been, like, people are corralled around me, and it's basically me giving, like, a little stand-up performance. I'm just talking. But from my experience, like, and callback is just your guaranteed laugh. People are going to laugh at some shit that you referenced from a previous conversation.
Callback's hilarious.
Do you still perform with COVID, or is it, like, is that a wrap right now?
for me as a rap right now, I've actually been offered 3 gigs in the midst of COVID. Two of them I knew for sure I wasn't going.
They were on the phone calling, and, hey, we need you to perform.
No, they wanted me to do the whole virtual comedy show.
Okay.
And I just can't do it. And it's because I freestyle my jokes. I feed off of you laughing. So if they was like, we're going to do it, we're going to have it on Zoom, and everybody might be on mute so you can everybody can hear you, hear the jokes and stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to tell a joke and see people going. Or I'm sitting there telling my joke, and just like all our listeners should know by now, there's going to be one time in our show that my daughter's going to walk in here. And so I'm sitting there trying to tell a joke, and I'm like, I'm telling a joke, killing it. And they say, no, my audience like this. What you say? Huh? They go out of picture. I'm back here. And I'm sitting there, I told 3 jokes in there. They like, what do you say? I don't know what he goes on.
And now you try to do a callback, and they didn't even hear the original reference.
They
didn't
hear the original call. they hear me dial the number the first time.
So what got you started in comedy? I don't think I've ever heard the story.
Oh, so originally starting comedy was simply because I was funny. All my boys was, and I've always been the funny one of the group. In school, I've been the funny one. But you know what's crazy? In my high school, I actually wanted the funniest. I can literally give credit to my entire graduating class. 90% of us was hilarious. All we do is crack each other. And we still, to this day, be on Facebook. Somebody say, hey, what's going on? Ain't nothing going on, motherfucker. What you doing? And then boom, roast.
Yeah, it's happening.
But yeah, so I got into it because of, we sitting around, we tripping. And then one boy was like, man, you should go and do the funny bone. And I'm like, man, funny bone ain't ready for me. I'm going to that joint, I'm going to kill it. talking shit. Mm-hmm. And this is during the time, open mic joints, you could just go and sign up and get on. That's all this politics to get on, front of all. But you just go sign up and you performing. So boy, did that. They signed me up and said, hey, you performing such and such night. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do it. I'm doing it. But me, I'm talking shit. Yeah, I can do it. Yeah, invite everybody. I don't care. And niggas were showing up in droves.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, shit.
And nerves kicked in.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't write jokes. So I tried to write a joke. And I called my boy Leon and my boy Richard. Mm. On to a call. And this was an hour before showtime. I called them and I said, hey, here go the 2 jokes I wrote. I said it to him over the phone. And after I finished saying it, nothing. They didn't laugh at all. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Because that's all I had. I ain't had nothing else. All I had was those 2 jokes I wrote. And so first thing I asked them, do you got anything else? I said, nope. It was like, well, roll with it. And I said, y'all sure y'all coming? They're like, yeah. I said, well, all I know is I'm getting on stage and I'm just going to perform for y'all. So as long as this is something we can all go back and, later on and say, remember that time Boogie got on the funny bone? Had the nerve to get up there?
Yeah.
So I go up and, bro, when I tell you, people found out I was performing, man. I mean, like, dead ass, yo. Packed house in the joint. And I went up and I said my first joke and I literally looked at my wife and my boy Richard. I ain't looking nobody else in the audience because he couldn't even see everybody past the doctors. But just right here, I can see the first 2 rows. I said the joke and just looked at them. Like, they didn't laugh. But then all of a sudden, you heard, everybody started laughing. I looked up like, oh, yeah, that's funny. Let me tell you about my life. And from that point, I just started freestyling. And I won.
It was a competition?
Yeah, it was a competition.
So the people you were going up against, was it like a newbie competition or just a general comedy competition?
All newbie competition. It was
so everybody there was just starting.
Technically, yes. So some
they're beginning stages.
Beginning stages, yeah. So gotcha, everybody's gotcha. Beginning stage. Either you fresh, or you are doing a lot of open mic circuits. So you still ain't really professionally paid yet. You're just doing a lot of open mic circuits. So the people I went up against I'm the only fresh one. Mm-hmm. I'm the only brand new dude up there. Everybody else had been there before. And it was 14 of us.
Wow.
I won.
So that like boosted your confidence, I imagine. Like you were very confident after that, or was it a different experience?
Actually, quite opposite.
Huh.
Quite opposite.
So how'd you feel?
So I won, and I felt great. Like, I was on top of the world. And my winning prize was, that was on Wednesday night. My winning prize was the opener for Bruce on that Friday.
Mm-hmm.
That was the prize. I called the funny bone on Friday morning. hey, I can't do it. They're like, what? I said, yeah, I can't do it. I'm not gonna be there. They like, we mean I'm gonna be there. This is what people care for, this opportunity. You know, you got a major headliner coming and you can open for them. Yeah, I'm scared. Can't do it. And I think it's because I looked at it, you know, like when people found out that I was coming to the Funny Bone, mm-hmm. it was different because it was like when they started laughing, I felt like all these people know me. They know I'm crazy as hell. They know this shit come out of my mouth. People are like, oh my God, I can't believe they just said that type of comedy. But I feel like they knew me, so it's easy for me to make them laugh. Mm-hmm. Now you only go perform in front of Bruce, and I'm from a whole bunch of people, random people that drove from all over everywhere to come see Bruce.
Yeah.
And you're perform for them. Scared the shit out of me.
I think it would have scared the shit out of anybody, especially given that that would have been your second performance, right?
Yeah, that would have been my second performance ever.
Yeah.
And again, I ain't had nothing written, so I was going there to freestyle.
Yeah. That's always fascinating to me because you're the only person I've heard of people, comedians, who freestyle jokes. And the guy who does Curb Your Enthusiasm, not Larry David, but his homeboy, manager.
The big one, yeah.
He freestyles. So he doesn't write anything. Yeah. He just goes, but if you watch his stuff, it's like, oh, yeah, you freestyle. You know what I mean? Like, it's obvious. It's like, yeah, this isn't tight material. Like, you're definitely just, you know, free-flowing. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine that many other – like, when you tell comedians that you know that you freestyle, I imagine they're very surprised.
They are. Because they're like, what do you mean you don't write? Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, they have writing sessions. And I've been invited to a couple of them. And I've went and I've gone and – and as you know, you and I experienced together, I am always been the enhancer. So when I go to these writing sessions, my notebook be blank. Like, I literally sit there like, I don't even pick the pen up. I be sitting there playing with it, if anything, just playing with the pen. Mm-hmm. Like, what you got? Nothing. And it was pretty cool with these writing sessions. I don't know if they still do it, but it's literally all the local comedians go to the Funny Bone on a Saturday morning. They open up and let us go. And it's literally just the comedians. And we sit there performing for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only new material. You go up there with just your new material and like, tell me how this joke go. And you know, people get up there, they'll say their joke, and they'll be like, and so then us and all, they'll be like, maybe, you know, they should do it like this, you should do it like this. So it actually became a thing where when I would go, people were like, hey, is Boogie coming? Because I could literally take your joke that you just said, and like, so this is what I would have said if I did it. And then boom, 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 boom. Next thing you know, they saying it at the joke next time.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been the answer. And it's, again, people still say, well, Boogie, I mean, you can write. I can't. Give me the idea and then let me go ahead and add something to it. And then we roll it like that. So it's like the enhancing thing, man. I've been doing the enhancing thing for like a good 10 years now.
It always surprised me when you say you don't write because I read your blog and the blog was well written.
You know what's crazy?
What?
All my blogs are freestyle. It was literally, okay, what am I write about today? I write about my first time performing. I write about that. Cut the computer on, boom.
But that's writing, though. That's writing. That's what writing is. When Shelton sits down and writes a script, Shelton's a bad example. But when screenwriters typically, not that Shelton doesn't do this, but I think he puts a little more forethought into it. But yeah, there's tons of screenwriters who, they like in the course that I have on screenwriting, he's like, bro, don't worry about outlining on the structure shit. Just write your story. Just write it. Once it's out, now you can come and do the easier part, which is editing. So you did essentially the first part of what writing is, which is just like Curb Your Enthusiasm. I heard somebody debating about Curb Your Enthusiasm, which you know is a improv show. And they try to say that improv is a, or some writers look down on the fact that it's improv. And I heard one showrunner like, bro, he's still writing. Because if you go to a writer's room, that's what they're doing. Curb Enthusiasm films, he has like a very loose script, very loose outline. He has just the story beats, right? No real dialogue, really, unless there's something really important that has to be said. But it's just this happens, and then you go act that out. But they do that act out over and over and over and over and over and over again, testing out different ways to approach it and then just keep the best variation. That's all the fuck writing is. That's all that is. You're just actually writing it down. So it's like there's writers who do what you do. It seems you just have a preference to speak it. So there's writers who just will record themselves doing what you say you do, which is just freestyle, telling a story, but freestyle it. And then they'll transcribe it. They'll just write down exactly what it said on the recording, and then they'll just tweak it. They'll remove words where there's too many words there, which you have total capability of doing. A lot of people just, they just make the writing process harder than what needs to be. I was one of them until I learned that, you know, you want to just get the shit out and not worry about if it's good first, which is what you do on stage and what you do when you enhance. Just get it out. And after you get it out, now you can polish it a bit. And you can polish it over and over and over and over again. And now you're fucking Woody Allen and you got, you know, all these fucking awards and shit. Because I'm writing the script right now, man. For y'all don't know, we're collectively writing. Boogie is audibly writing.
Yes, I'm an audible writer.
script that we're hopefully going to, me, him, and Shelton are producing it ourselves, financing and everything. I'm hoping that we can get that thing filmed mid to late next year is my hope. But you know, the most exciting part about it to me is being on set is exciting, but beyond that, I won't tell y'all like the story or anything because we're still working that out. But the thing that's exciting, I'm really looking forward to, is the casting portion.
Yeah, casting is gonna be
really fun. I'm really excited about the casting part because I want to. First of all, it has to be very gratifying to see people like trying to get your part and bring your vision to life. But then also, it's like just trying to find that perfect person. And I even think like for you and for me and for Ian, because we're also actors, we get like a special perspective of what it's like to be on the other side.
Right. And it's funny you said it because I actually tell people, young actors, or I didn't say young actors, when I say young, I don't mean age, I mean young is years in the game. I always tell them about it, and I can only speak on experience. So I haven't been no acting school or nothing like that. I said, but I've just been on sets. I've been in front of big names before. So it's like, I always tell them about it. If you have the opportunity to be on the other side of the camera, I don't care what job it is, but just understanding how crew works actually helps you as an actor. Most definitely helps you as an actor, because if you've ever worked the boom mic before, once you put those headphones on, man, it picks up everything. So you put the headphones and you sit there, you're holding the boom mic over, you can now hear two actors talking, and you're like, wait, I can't hear him. I can't hear. And then you're switching the mics around and all that. So learning that part of the job, so now it's like, okay, now I'm going to put my acting head back on. It's like, now you know where you got to project your voice, because you can see where the mic is. Your audience can't, but you can see where the mic is. So now you know where to check your voice. So if you have a line that you like, oh man, come on, but the mic never picked it up. So that's when you like, you can add extra acting, and you be like, oh man, come on. You know, you did all of that just so the mic can hear you. So it's like understanding the crew jobs, man. I tell them about it. That's why I'm thankful for Shelton. He was very open to us trying to help, you know, or even being around. Because a lot of times you're going, okay, you're going to set. The directors don't want the crew, I mean, the actors just sitting around.
Well, I would only add that, nigga, that was out of necessity. This nigga Shelton was in deep ass water, boy. He couldn't swim. He needed some help.
Help me.
No, I'm sure he also, I think he just wanted us around, first of all.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, and then he respected, well, given that your experience, he knew that you were the only person there, literally, who has seen how this is really done. You and Steve. But so he definitely leaned a lot on y'all, and we all helped out in different ways to make make certain scenes funnier. Stuff that people haven't even picked up on, man, like the writing on the dry erase board at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
It just looked like you having me eat something in the background. Just little stuff like that, just to enhance the scenes. So that will probably be the second thing I'm looking forward to when we film this movie. First is the casting. Second will be coming up with things on set that we couldn't have thought of
while writing. See it acted out.
Yeah, because, like, you see, like, I was reading the 40-year-old version script, just trying to read really funny, real good movie scripts just so I can internalize how it's written. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's so different than the movie. Like, yeah. Some of the funniest parts were parts that were, like, you know, they just thought of on set or improv, you know, on set.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, because that was what, when I think about Fame for My Family, it was a lot that happened, but that was talking just behind the scenes on set, but then also, like, being able to access a part of your creativity that you don't always have a need to access, really, right? Because yeah, you're not always on set. So when you get this opportunity, it's like you get to, you know, bring forth a deeper level of creativity that you normally don't even get to see or even you were capable of. So I'm definitely excited, man. We just need you to wrap up this third act so we can get this shit. You know? All of that writing advice, nigga, was all to say, I need you to write this movie, nigga. We need you to finish this, wrap it up. It's getting tough.
Bro, I was on a golden glow. You know, I was like, got that glow. Saturday, we used to the outline. Said that I was in the garage and I was reading the outline. I was like, boom, this is what we need to do. And it was like I would have an out-of-body experience. Like, it wasn't even me. Like, I felt like I was there watching me talk. Like, I was going to say to myself, this is what we need to do. We need to do this. We need to do that. This would be great. We did this. I mean, I was like, so much, yo. It was so much that I ain't even, like, typing all of it. And I was like, we need to talk. So I can tell everybody, I can just talk it again. Uh-huh. As you know, I'm an audible person.
Yeah.
So, like, I just want to tell, so I still got stuff to say. I just ain't right there.
We're going to have the Zoom call. Yeah, we'll have the Zoom call, man. We can have that before I finish this pass through, just in case you got important story elements to the script. But yeah, man, I think we're about at time now. I think we've been going for about an hour. So, ladies and gentlemen, you have just witnessed the third episode of Two Uninformed Opinions. Hopefully, we brought the laughs and made you think a little bit. Like always, like, subscribe, comment, then definitely leave a review on any platform that you're listening to this podcast on. It will help us out a lot. And send it to anyone who you think would appreciate this insight, these uninformed opinions, and these jokes. With that said, I'm your host, Marquette. It's Comedian Boogie. Till next time.